like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Folks, welcome to the Light of Day radio show, coming to you live from the Sonora Desert in Tucson, Arizona. It's Saturday night, June 5th, 2010. June 5th, 2010. Welcome to the Light of Day show. Still got the theme music playing there. Anyway, here we are live, and our scheduled guest tonight, Marshall Masters, has canceled, and I'd like to go over why he has canceled. First of all, I was doing some email exchanges with a friend of mine up in Canada by the name of Lonnie, and apparently these email exchanges, you know, I forwarded these on to Marshall just because I like to give him a heads up on what we might talk about on the show. And so here's Lonnie's email. Marshall Masters, don't like the guy. Another 2012 fake Colburn selling guy. Don't trust him one bit. Personally think you should nail him on the 2012 issue because he seems to push it a far bit, and I tend to agree with that. Excuse me. Looking forward to the show. His whole presentation based on the YouTube comment posting seems very shaky to me. And, you know, I've been somewhat suspicious of this guy myself, folks, because he does put books out there that have red balls on the cover, just like the other books do, which tells me this could be a psychological warfare operation of some kind. Anyway, I replied to Lonnie by stating, I will ask Marshall about the 2012 date and telling him what Professor McCanny thinks about Colburn's with red balls on the cover, and asking him why he doesn't cover John Moore's information. By the way, folks, John Moore has also told me that's the reason he doesn't want to interview Marshall Masters, is because this is one red flag, are these Colburn's that have red balls on the cover. Anyway, the email goes on. I state that just because Marshall worked for CNN doesn't scare me. I'll ask him a few pressing questions indeed. Thanks for the encouragement, Lonnie. Then Lonnie replied to me with this email. I kind of have to skim over because I don't want to read the whole thing to you. But Sheldon, don't you find it is very odd that there is almost no one to get as guests that fit his description, Lonnie's description, well-educated on the topic, not a religious freak and not a shill, and know exactly who the powers that be are. Don't you find that very strange? There's just a little, to many, the rapture is your only hope, guys, very suspicious. Maybe we should start a list of known shills, good intention, religious nuts, bad intention shills using religion as a cover, good intention people being used by shills, and people who are legitimate. If I had a website, I'd post that in big letters on the homepage with a short explanation as to why the person has what label. I'd like to see a list of the names for the people speaking on your sound bites that I've been making. Many of them I might know, but can't match the voice to the name. That's irrelevant, but I read it anyway. Well, you might expect this from me, but I gotta say, it sure seems to me Marshall Masters is a lion shill. He doesn't bring anything to the table, but once he draws you to his site, there is clear disinformation waiting to draw a guy in. For example, 2012, fake Colburn, no real science or history, etc. If that's not a purposely acting shill, I'm not sure what is. You know, it's funny, Sheldon, just last night I re-listened to your interview with Jason Rand. Wow, what a striker that one was. I'm not sure he told any real truth upon second listen. Lonnie. And sure enough, I've been sending other emails to Marshall Masters, and he's now blocked me, so... Sure enough, folks, he could be a shill. I'm not afraid to state it on my show. Maybe he is legitimate. Just thought I'd throw that out there for what it's worth. Anyway, I'm going to be rereading some articles here tonight, and for the first time ever, I am going to welcome phone calls on the show tonight. I scrambled to look for a guest. I was going to bring John DiNardo back on, but he didn't reply to my emails, and he didn't answer his phone. So, excuse me. The live call-in number is 716-213-6816, 716-213-6816. And if you folks out there, if anybody does decide to call in, can you please wait just a little bit, because I want to get some of these articles out of the way here. By the way, my co-host, John DiNardo, he was a guest on Gianni Hayes' program over on American Voice Radio Network Wednesday night. Her show is called A New World Order Disorder. I'm awaiting John to send the CD with that archive on so I can get it posted on my website, because it takes Mr. Stefan over there at American Voice Radio Network quite a few months to get Gianni's recent show was posted. It's pretty unfortunate. And just a reminder, John Moore has a new shortwave radio show on WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio. That's Thursday nights at 5 p.m. Central Time on Tower 2. The frequency is 9.350 megahertz. And, let's see, what else? I recently posted an interview that Dr. Carly did with Jeff Renz. From Wednesday, May 19th, and you can go to my Dr. Carly archive subpage and scroll to the very bottom to listen to that interview. I have a lot of support for what Dr. Carly does. And I also posted the Bombs Over Baghdad opening theme piece that she uses on her shows. That's on the very top. I have embedded that within a small Windows Media Player, but on your Firefox browser, it shows it as a mini iTunes or QuickTime player. Here's a sort of a news flash. The Horizon Deepwater oil platform, I believe, may have been hit by a directed energy weapon, folks. I've posted two pictures on the top of my Flash News subpage, two different pictures that shows a circularized burn pattern on the helicopter landing deck of that oil platform. That's just two separate images. We need more confirmation on this, so if folks can find any further images out there of that platform before it disappeared into the Gulf. I've checked this out with Dr. Judy Wood, and she says that those pictures have been out there a while. It's hard to tell if these are just photoshopped images or whatever, but it is kind of interesting. Because here again, we have the signature of a directed energy weapon, the circularized holes, which were seen in windows adjacent to the World Trade Center towers after the towers disappeared. Is the word Dr. Wood uses on 9/11. I also have a picture of a circularized burn pattern on the side of a semi-tractor trailer after the Minnesota bridge collapse here a few years ago. So this is one of the signatures that is commonly seen with the usage of a directed energy weapon. So any further confirmation out there would be greatly appreciated. By the way, Dr. Judy Wood's research associate, Andrew Johnson, was on Jim Jancic's radio show out of Chicago here 6 days ago on Sunday night. And I've posted that on under the Dr. Judy Wood archive section on my Archives Miscellaneous subpage. So if you folks want to go there and you can listen to that as well. Andrew's a pretty sharp researcher into what the truth about what really happened on 9/11. And, you know, we still got the crowd out there that don't believe directed energy weapons were used, but, you know, sometimes I get on Lee Rogers' show over there on Oracle, and I tell him about these weapons, but for some reason he doesn't concur with me on it. If he... Excuse me. If you folks would go out there and just check out Dr. Wood's QTAM lawsuit, it specifically states... This lawsuit, by the way, folks, has been ongoing now for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, appointed 23 contractors to figure out conditions leading up to the so-called collapse of the towers, even though it wasn't really a collapse, folks. That's just a word they're throwing out there to us. It was a mid-air pulverization as what it was, because we have steel that was clearly seen turning instantly into dust. Anyway, this NIST appointed these 23 contractors, and sure enough, two of the contractors listed on this lawsuit that Dr. Wood has are developers and manufacturers of directed energy weapons, specifically ARA, Applied Research Associates, and SAIC, Scientific Applications International Corporation. I think they're out of San Diego. But I'm telling you, folks, you do your research into this, you'll find out that it was directed energy weapons. And, you know, I have an email here I'd like to read to support everything Dr. Judy Wood's been doing in the 9/11. This is from a guy named Thomas. Can't pronounce the last name, not even going to try. But he had a nice email here he sent to me to support what Dr. Wood's doing. Sheldon, here's an email from me to you that you may feel free to use as you please. Dr. Judy Wood is one of the true heroes of the 9/11 truth movement. And I'd like to interject by calling that a controlled truth movement. For this, she has gotten very little recognition, much contempt, and personally suffered way more than most. Dr. Wood has put together perhaps the most detailed and in-depth website concerning the events in New York City on 9/11 that can be found on the Internet. Her maps, blueprints, diagrams, and photos are unrivaled. And he didn't put it here, but I'd like to interject that she also has all the pictures of Hurricane Erin on her site, which was parked right outside Manhattan on the morning of 9/11, and we have evidence of field effects felt at two or three local airports. I believe light rain and dry thunder were the field effects from the hurricane. Email goes on. This is probably why the various COINTELPRO agents and Judas Goetz within the truth movement have put her down and steered the minds of most truthers away from her work. Her cookie-cutter holes in the remnants of the buildings at Ground Zero and her empty basement scenes defy explanation. Okay, Her cookie-cutter holes in the remnants of the buildings at Ground Zero and her empty basement scenes defy explanation without incorporating the postulate that exotic weaponry and mechanisms were used. Her photographic proof that the rubble pile at Ground Zero was less than 4 stories tall also defies explanation using conventional means. Dr. Wood and her attorney, Jerry Liepart, have forced NIST, that's the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, to admit that much of their work on the explanation of the destruction of Buildings 1 and 2 was subbed out to two defense contractors whose main areas of expertise has nothing to do with building construction, but mainly to do with exotic weapons, research, and development. Her attempts at holding the government accountable for the explanation of the events of 9/11 have been Herculean. Herculean, whatever that is. She is both a great and fearless mind and a great patriot. It is a damn shame that the vast majority of Americans don't really care what really happened on 9/11 as long as we still have cheap gasoline. Getting people to see the truth is fairly easy. Getting them to care may be impossible. Tom Tveitan, or I can't pronounce it, but he's a medical doctor. And he gives a quote here, a Chinese proverb, quote, you can't awaken a person who is pretending to be asleep. So there's that email. Now, as a lot of us folks know, there are a lot of strange happenings going on, a lot of strange peculiarities manifest at the Denver International Airport. We have an update about the Denver Airport here. This was put out on Lee Rogers' show here two or three nights ago. And I got this from the VATIC project, that's V as in Victor, A-T-I-C project. Here it is, dated June 4th, so this would have been from yesterday. A 26-foot-tall Anubis statue installed at Denver International Airport. One of the biggest sculptures from a new exhibit of ancient Egypt was unveiled Wednesday at the airport to kick off this event. In a mere 27 days, Denver will go King Tut crazy. The installation of the 7-ton, 26-foot-tall statue of Anubis took place at the south end of the Denver Airport Terminal. Anubis was the ancient Egyptian god of the afterlife. And it's too bad we can't get former talk show host Bill Cooper on here to maybe let us know what this is about, because they, you know, here we go, ancient Egyptian symbology again at an airport. That's something Bill Cooper would know about. Article goes on, it's an exhibition of about 100 objects, both from King Tut's tomb and 2,000 years of ancient Egyptian history. And it really walks people through what Pharaoh's life was like, what family's life was like, and then you'll actually go down some stairs and into a space that's basically a replicated tomb of King Tutankhamun, if that's how you pronounce it, and see about 50 or so objects from the king's tomb, said Christy Bassuner with the Denver Art Museum. The polyurethane and steel structure took some time and effort to build. The wind blew it around and a crane got stuck in the gravel, but Anubis would not be denied. These objects, quote, these objects are incredibly important. They very rarely travel outside of Egypt. They are priceless treasures from long ago. This is the first time King Tut's treasures have ever been to the Rocky Mountain region. So here we go, folks. Maybe we got relocation now of ancient Egyptian artifacts to the Mile High City area. Possibly another dot connector. And now with Anubis in place, the countdown begins toward a six-month, once-in-a-lifetime exhibit filled with treasures never before seen and never to be seen again. The statue of Anubis is right in front of the windows at the south end of the main terminal at Denver Airport. This exhibit opens on June 29th and runs through January 9th of next year. So there's that. We're going to be coming to break here in about 4 or 5 minutes. After we come out of the break, I'm going to play a new soundbite that I created this week, and I think you folks will enjoy that. Oh, here, this article does continue, actually. Ever since it was first installed at the Denver Airport, the 32-foot-tall blue Mustang has been the talk of the town, but a new addition is sure to get plenty of attention. A crew is installing a 7-ton, 26-foot-tall concrete sculpture of an Egyptian god at the airport. Anubis, a statue... Well, actually, I was supposed to read this in the beginning, but anyway, here we go. Anubis, a statue with a jackal head, will be built south of the Jeppesen Terminal. Although part of the lore of the 9,000-pound Mustang is that its creator, Luis Jimenez, was tragically killed while making the piece. Now, this is the first statue, folks, that was installed at the airport. Anubis may be even more notorious. He's the Egyptian god of death and the afterlife. It's being put in to preview the Denver Art Museum's King Tut exhibit. The exhibit runs, I already mentioned that, and Anubis will be standing guard during that time. Now, this is the first piece of King Tut exhibit on display at the airport. The big King Tut exhibit doesn't open at the Denver Art Museum until the end of the month, but the first piece is already on display, standing tall outside the Denver airport. It's an exhibition of royal artifacts, thousands of years in the making, and it's never been seen in Denver before and will never be again. One of the biggest sculptures from a new exhibit of ancient Egypt was unveiled Wednesday at the airport to kick off this event. I already read that. I didn't really sequentialize my this article very well, but I'm sure you guys get the idea here. Also got some stuff I want to read here about this what could be a possibly a oil volcano underneath that oil platform that burned down to the Gulf there. This is from my friend John DiNardo. This was sent on Thursday. The email is entitled "New Information on the Gulf Gusher." About 3 years ago, my friend Mark, who is ex-military and maintains some friendly contacts with access to deep information, told me that his friend, who works for the U.S. Geological Survey, told him that the government/oil companies have detected that areas of the Gulf of Mexico seabed are rising, and that they see this as a great opportunity to drill for oil. Now, if we recall, a few weeks ago, the seabed floor down there off the coast of Australia was also rising. I can't remember if it was 13 or 31 feet. Anyway, back to the email. At the time, I did not understand why rising seabeds would offer opportunities for oil drilling, but lately I have been putting together some of the puzzle pieces that are emerging from this mysterious issue of the Gulf Gusher. Someone recently posted an article asserting or surmising that this 1 mile deep gusher is like a volcano. So it occurred to me that their satellites must have shown them exactly where this massive pimple was breaking out on the ocean floor, and they were able to detect oil deposits which are under pressure to burst upward. Someone else also reported that Obama recently gave them permission to do this deep sea drilling. Well, folks, here comes the break. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to The Light of Day on Orion. Stay tuned.
Speech guaranteed. You're listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day radio show with your host, Sheldon Day, coming to you live on Orion Talk Network. We're live Saturday night, June 5th, 2010. We are opening the lines for phone callers. If anybody wants to call in, number is 716-213-6816, 716-213-6816. I was going to play a soundbite that I created this week. I think you folks will really enjoy it. I'm going to play another one after the top of the hour. So here's the first one. Please enjoy.
Preceding event that will be recognized by all people just prior to very serious consequences that I've outlined is this: when a space shuttle mission is forced to abort because of a meteor shower, when that shuttle is forced down to the ground by meteor showers, which is probably in and of itself an unprecedented event, that's when it begins.
Well, actually, with a few months ago, about 4 months ago, our U.S. government, NASA, it's in the Chandra X-ray Observatory satellite. Chandra, spelled C-H-A-N-D-R-A, X-ray Observatory satellite, did actually sight Planet X. This information that they put out, they did actually report that they saw this huge comet, but they were not able to identify it. That's the falsehood right there. But the fact that they did notice a huge comet, I guess it was impossible to cover it up, so they actually made this report. But the report was somewhere buried somewhere in the news. Marshall Masters, a former science editor for CNN, Cable News Network, has done a lot of research on Planet X, and he has mentioned that he had reported that someone had put on the internet actual footage, film footage or photographs of Planet X that was taken by the South Pole telescope. This is a secret telescope. It's not been revealed to the public. They spent millions of dollars to construct this South Pole telescope in 2007. And January of 2008, there was someone who was probably either a friend or acquaintance or one of the astronomers themselves at the South Pole Observatory who put this visual information, this photographic evidence of Planet X on the YouTube. Okay, within one day, this photographic evidence of Planet X taken from the South Pole telescope was taken down.
In case of a major situation where a comet, I'm talking specifically about a large comet in the sky, the population has realized this, this comet is not going away, it's ever present on everybody's mind, the evening news is trying to talk about other things, and the only thing that people want to know is what is that thing and what's doing up there, and we don't think it's no little dirty snowball. And we want to know where it's going, and we know that there's people out there that knew this thing was coming in, and we know that they know where it's going. And we're tired of the phony answers. And like I say, a lot of people will realize this on their own. And they're going to want on their own to get out. That's where you bring in all of the Homeland Security, the FEMA, the containment of the population, and that's where I would predict that if the government was going to unleash biowarfare and then contain the cities, that's when they would do that for sure. So you start to see the scenario. You start to see all the laws that have been placed in front of you.
I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. The whole structure is going to collapse into total and absolute chaos. And a lot of these so-called patriots are going to turn into petty little warlords, are going to rape, loot, and steal. And so are other people who are not even patriots. Some patriots will try to preserve law and order and will be killed in the process. And the ruling elite will simply go underground until it's all finished.
But as far as underground bases, facilities, and shelters, there's actually quite a few of those. Cheyenne Mountain is one. Mount Weather is another one. It's worth looking into because they have been hollowing out these facilities, which, again, you know, there's something to be said for an underground shelter. However, if you're dealing with floods as well, then you want a shelter inside a mountain, something that's above sea level already. So, yeah.
Below the Mojave Desert, a bunker is under construction. This is not your parents' fallout shelter with worries over nuclear attacks, earthquakes, and terrorists. Doomsday digs are popping up around the country, and they are selling like hotcakes.
In the early 1980s, and I've known about this for a little while, the Washington Post report on this, but you found a lot of other reports in addition to the Washington Post report and a few others about this potential 10th planet or some sort of mystery object.
December 81, Astronomy Magazine launched an article called Search for the 10th Planet.
We are now aware of a very large object that is coming into the solar system, and there seems to be a historical recurrence of this object.
Maintain that what this is, it's probably a T-class or an L-class series brown dwarf star. It's basically the second heaviest body in the solar system. It is part of the solar system. It doesn't come into and go out of the solar system. It's the second heaviest body in the solar system.
That will flood miles inland in the continental United States, Canada, possibly elsewhere around the world. We're talking a flood of biblical proportions. Government agencies are aware of this. They've shared this with certain personnel. The U.S. Navy has apparently shared this with their service people. And there are apparently safe havens. The U.S. Government has been very busy constructing huge underground bases, if you will, in order to preserve government operations. To some degree,
these types of events usually generate not necessarily, tidal waves and things like that, but earthquakes and fireballs. You know, because if you have some flaming ball of rock that's shooting through the atmosphere, it's going to cause a lot of problems.
All converging on the fact that a global disaster will occur very soon. It's a recurring disaster. See, what has happened is that when this planet passes by, It has a tremendous magnetic field because if it comes close enough, which could be as close as 15 million miles, which is considered really really close, gravitational fields of Planet X or one of its thousands of surrounding comets. Also, the magnetic field of that passing space body will lock up magnetically and also gravitationally with Earth.
Given this scenario of the ever-present comet, someday in the future, or looking back to the past, one can well imagine that there's a lot of containment going on by the leaders of the world. The only way they can contain the public at this point would be by force, because a lot of the people would be saying to themselves, that government up there in Washington, D.C. is not going to be able to help me. This is too big an issue. A lot of people would realize that even if they had an invitation to a cave city, it's not exactly where they want to be. So you're going to have people trying to escape, trying to go into the country, trying to build a primitive existence because they know that that's their only hope of survival. Why do you think there's been a tremendous amount of planning to contain people in the cities?
Sheldon mentioned this telescope they're putting up in the South Pole. What do you suppose they're looking for?
Well, they're looking for the 10th planet. It's not that they're looking for it, they're tracking it.
They're tracking it, okay.
Because they found it in 1979 with the Pioneer 10 space probe. Something that's important, which is basically going to be the end of civilization as we know it. And the 10th planet travels with a debris field about a quarter million miles wide on either side of it, a debris field of small rocks and big rocks that there's a good chance some of them could be hitting us. Well, the 10th planet won't hit us.
Planet X is coming around. It happens every 3,600 years, so it's not going to strike the Earth, and we're going to get tidal fluctuations and flooding on the inland coastal areas, and that's why these guys are building all their underground stuff.
Another thing that will happen is if the Earth turns ever so slightly as it's rotating, winds will pick up all over the planet, and in some belts, those winds will achieve speeds of 200, 300 miles an hour for sustained speeds of 200 to 300 miles an hour for days on end. This will require you to be either in a slot canyon, underground in a shelter, concrete preferably, or somewhere out of those winds in a structure that will withstand winds of that speed.
What's going to happen is this whole structure is going to fall apart into utter and total chaos. The ruling elite are going to go underground and wait it out while everybody up here just kills each other off. Then they'll come back up and establish a despotism, and you will be ruled like the Lodge rules its members.
Well, there you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that new soundbite I created. That last part there was actually from a late 1995 show that Bill Cooper did, and believe it or not, when he mentioned the elite were going underground, he got kicked off the satellite. So I thought I'd just throw that in for what it's worth. Anyway, we are taking calls here tonight. If anybody does want to call in, the number is 716-213-6816. Back to this article I was reading here about the new information on the Gulf Oil Gusher volcano from John DiNardo. I want to read it over because we got distracted there by the bottom of the hour break. About 3 years ago, John's friend Mark, who is ex-military and maintains some friendly contacts with access to deep information, told John that his friend, who works for the U.S. Geological Survey, told him that the government/oil companies have detected that areas of the Gulf of Mexico seabed are rising, and that they see this as a great opportunity to drill for oil. At the time, I did not understand why rising seabeds would offer opportunities for oil drilling. But lately, John has been putting together some of the puzzle pieces that are emerging from this mysterious issue of the Gulf Oil Gusher. Someone recently posted an article asserting or surmising that this 1 mile deep gusher is like a volcano. So it occurred to John that their satellites must have shown them exactly where this massive pimple was breaking out on the ocean floor, and they were able to detect oil deposits which are under pressure to burst upward. Someone also reported that Obama recently gave them permission to do this deep sea drilling. Joyce Riley reported Thursday morning on her Power Hour radio show that it appears that the oil gusher was deliberate because large blocks of stocks were sold and or sold shortly soon before the gusher occurred. Moreover, someone sent John photos taken of the oil rig explosion with a blue beam of light shooting into the oil platform from the sky, and they say that it looks like a directed energy weapon. Now, I did check this out, folks. I'd like to interject here. There is this video put up by the username is Knight Riders, like the old TV show Knight Rider, but it has a Z at the end. And they capture the oil platform as it's burning down to the water. And here are these two vertical streaks of blue light shooting vertically down onto the platform while it's being engulfed in flames. I tend to think now that that's just an artifact of the video camera. Because, just for an example, when Jim Yancic was interviewing Dr. Wood's research associate, Andrew Johnson, Sunday night, his last webcam picture shows a vertical streak of blue light on his webcam, so this is apparently an artifact and shows up in video cameras. But, you know, regardless, there is these two pictures I have posted on my on my website, folks, if you want to check it out. It's at the top of my Flash News subpage. Go to the lightofdayradioshow.com and just click on the main menu. There's 11 main menu items. Just click on the Flash News and you'll go to the top and see the two pictures I posted, and there, sure enough, there is a circularized burn pattern on the helicopter landing deck of the Deepwater Horizon oil platform. And this is consistent with the signature we've seen from prior events like the Minnesota Bridge collapse and the World Trade Center tower catastrophe on 9/11. For example, there is these circularized round holes in adjacent building windows next to the World Trade Center towers. And also on the side of an emergency vehicle, this can all be seen on Dr. Judy Wood's website. Anyway, back to the email. John's information is sketchy, so he asks anyone with photos and more details to please send it to him at Cal's. I'm going to read out this email. Cal's at ValorNet. That's C as in Charlie, A as in Apple, L as in Libra, S as in Sam, at, the at symbol, ValorNet, V as in Victor, A as in Apple, L as in Libra, O as in Ocean, R as in Robert, net.com. And John will disseminate it to his email list. John looks forward to non-list recipients, any subsequent details acquired from list members. Thank you, John DiNardo. So there's that for what it's worth. I also have a article here entitled Shape-Shifting Islands Defy Sea Level Rise. This is dated June 2nd by Wendy Zuckerman. Anyway, the article says, against all the odds, a number of shape-shifting islands in the middle of the Pacific Ocean are standing up to the effects of climate change. For years, people have warned that the smallest nations on the planet, island states that barely rise out of the ocean, now face being wiped off the map by rising sea levels. Now, the first analysis of the data broadly suggests the opposite. Most have remained stable over the last 60 years, while some have even grown. Paul Kench at the University of Auckland in New Zealand and Arthur Webb at the South Pacific Applied Geoscience Commission in Fiji used historical aerial photos and high-resolution satellite images to study changes in the land surface of 27 Pacific islands over the last 60 years. During that time, local sea levels have risen by 120 millimeters or 2 millimeters per year on average. Despite this, Kench and Webb found that just four islands have diminished in size since the 50s. The area of the remaining 23 has either stayed the same or grown. Webb says the trend is explained by the island's composition. Unlike the sandbars of the eastern U.S. coast, low-lying Pacific islands are made of coral debris. This is eroded from the reefs that typically circle the islands and pushed up onto the islands by winds, waves, and currents. Because the corals are alive, they provide a continuous supply of material. Atolls are composed of once-living material, says Webb, so you have a continual growth. Causeways and other structures linking islands can boost growth by trapping sediment that would otherwise get lost to the ocean. All this means the islands respond to changing weather and climate. For instance, when Hurricane Bebe, B-E-B-E, hit Tuvalu in 1972, it deposited 140 hectares of sedimentary debris onto the eastern reef, increasing the area of the main island by 10%. I also had an email from a Dr. Nips up in Pennsylvania here, if I could quickly find it. Yeah, this is something she mentioned in regards to the big catastrophe going on in the Gulf of Mexico right now. She sent this Thursday. She owns a health food store up there in Pennsylvania. She's a great disseminator of information. She says, one of the things that we have not heard of yet is a storm surge that precedes all hurricanes. If a hurricane comes into the Gulf this summer, a storm surge due to the low atmospheric pressure of the hurricane, say 15 to 20 feet, will coat oil all over the wetlands and low-lying coastal areas with a fresh coat of crude oil. The storm surge could easily go, say, 20 miles inland. So there's just some food for thought on the upcoming hurricane season. You know, folks, if this gets out of hand and it gets bad enough, they may end up evacuating most of the East Coast, including the Gulf Coast. There's going to be deadly benzene gas circulating in the atmosphere, and it's going to come down in rain, and it's going to destroy the crop, the crops and all that. Anyway, the reason I was reading this article about shape-shifting islands defy sea level rise is because of something that my friend John up in Milwaukee had sent me earlier this year. This was up in the Aleutian Islands where these residents had already been fleeing. Well, I probably don't have time here to look for it, but I'll probably read it after the break. Now, I got something here. We're going to be going into a break again here in about, about 3 to 4 minutes. After we come out of the top of the hour break, I'm going to play a sound clip that was put up by Linda Howe on the Coast to Coast AM radio show from 5 years ago. I don't totally trust Linda Howe. I think she's an agent. This is even right out of Bill Cooper's book, Behold a Pale Horse. I'm sorry. Bill Cooper thought that Linda Howe may be innocent of witting involvement in what she's doing. She particularly seems to have exercised extreme care in what she has presented to the public. Her research is excellent. Mr. Cooper was impressed when she confided to him that Sergeant Richard Doty of the Counterintelligence Division of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations had taken her into the intelligence office at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico and showed her the exact same documents that Mr. Cooper had also seen while in the Navy. Linda Howe has even saw the same information on the Kennedy assassination, naming Greer as the assassin. Miss Howe is also the only person in the world outside of the intelligence community who knows the truth, as Mr. Cooper knew it, regarding Operation Majority. She has exercised good judgment and great restraint in not revealing the contents of those documents to the public. Anyway, there's a break. We'll finish up with this Linda Howe thing after the top of the hour. You're listening to The Light of Day on Orion Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned for Hour 2.